This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by Manscaped. Hey folks, it's Jake Miller from The Drive, and Manscaped is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. Manscaped's Performance Package, the ultimate men's hygiene bundle. Join over 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with this exclusive offer for you. 20% off and free worldwide shipping with the code 20DRIVE. That's 20DRIVE at manscaped.com. And if my math is correct, that's about 8 million balls.
It's time for The Drive's Top 4 at 4.
All right, welcome back. It's hour number 2 of The Drive underway. The Top 4 at 4 brought to you this afternoon by National RX. We send things back to the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Here once again is Jake Miller.
Thank you, Russell. Up first, Tennessee will take on Georgia in about an hour and a half on the SEC Network. That way the SEC Network can cater to Alabama and Auburn.
We got Blade Tidwell going tonight for the Volunteers against, I believe, Cannon is the young man's name. That's a good name for a pitcher.
Yes.
Our guy, Logan Booker, last night told us this is Georgia's ace. So I don't know if they just always want to pitch their ace on Friday night or if they tried to match it up a little bit, if they figure that this is their best chance to get a win. But they're doing that thing Serrano used to do. So we'll see. Tennessee, I mean, I won't say they're struggling to score runs. You scored 5 last night, but we've been accustomed to more than that, so they're going to have to bring the bats again this evening to get that W and win the series.
That they will. Number 2, Brooklyn Nets star Kyrie Irving has long had one of the Nike's most popular and profitable signature shoes, but uncertainty surrounding his NBA future have left the company unlikely to extend him to a similar signature deal beyond the 2022-23 season. Irving has a new edition of his shoes set to debut in the fall, but that is expected to be the final year of a lucrative signature series that he's had since 2014.
What does he call a shoe? The Kyrie Flat Earth?
I mean, they're pretty flat-footed shoes, yeah.
The vaccine.
See, I always forget that that's Kyrie. That's a flat earther. And it's just really hard to... I mean, once you tell me you're a flat earther, it's hard for me to really take anything else you have to say seriously that involves me trusting your intelligence. Is that harsh?
I mean, it's cost him, man. It cost him a lot this season. Obviously, their team was a train wreck. Now it's cost him the endorsement deal. Just, you know, it's not just the flat earth thing or the vaccine, his vaccine stance or something. It's just the whole package. There's a lot of weirdness there, and man, how hard is it just to be normal, man? Just show up, do your job, keep your mouth shut, and good things will come to you. And if you don't, good things won't come to you. And I'm sure he's still a very, very wealthy man, but man, play basketball, right? I mean, that's your job. And it's interesting to see his career is kind of taking this weird turn. I mean, it looked like the world was his oyster. Remember when he and LeBron won a championship together in Cleveland, and you're thinking, wow, they could have a little bit of a mini dynasty here, and both of those guys have gone their separate ways, obviously.
Yeah. The thing I've noticed about these guys, it seems like the guys that have all the stuff going on, like on social media and it's stuff that has nothing to do with their sport. Aren't the guys that you see winning championships?
Funny how that works, huh?
Yeah. Like, just to go back to Giannis. I don't see Giannis getting caught up in anything. You know, you got to keep your focus, man.
Good point, Jake.
Number 3, an Iowa nonprofit organization is proposing a $50 million, 3,000-seat permanent ballpark at the Field of Dreams site. The multipurpose stadium could be used for future MLB games, college and high school tournaments, camps, concerts, and festivals.
Haven't they kind of, I thought they already had a more or less permanent stadium set up out there. Is it just for that one game a year?
Yeah, pretty much.
I think they kind of come in and do that. Like nothing's permanent about it. They just, from what I understand.
Some bleachers and kind of set it up.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I think so. I've never, really seen the entire movie, but it sounds like a cool idea.
Oh, I forgot. Field of Dreams is on the list of awesome things Bear hates. We might need a reading.
Nah, we're good on that.
Might need a reading. And it is apropos, too. I did catch that, Bear. Another, I like how all the movies that are on the list of awesome things that Bear hates, you haven't actually seen. You just hate them because you think you should hate them.
No, I mean, I saw a part. I'm not the biggest Kevin Costner fan in the world.
Oh, man.
I think he plays the same character pretty much every movie.
No, he doesn't. I mean, the guy from Field of Dreams, he played Robin Hood.
Yeah, and he sounded like the guy. He sounded like the guy from Field of Dreams when he played Robin Hood.
Dances with Wolves. I mean, sorry, not everybody can be Daniel Day-Lewis. Anyway,
go ahead.
And finally, at number four, the NFL will open its 2022 season where the final game of last season kicked off in SoFi Stadium. Super Bowl champion Los Angeles Rams will host the Buffalo Bills on September 8th. And the Bills and the Rams matchup features elite quarterback play between Matthew Stafford and Josh Allen. Also, to kick off Monday Night Football, Denver will play at Seattle, so Russell Wilson will already be back at home to start out Monday Night Football.
How about that?
Interesting.
A nice little quirk of the schedule there. What do you guys think about my Titans schedule? On one hand, five of the first eight games on the road. Is that a bad thing, or is it good to have a bunch of home games later in the season when everybody's banged up and you need the wins?
Always like a lot of home games late in the year.
Yeah, they also have, I think, the 24th hardest schedule in football, which is obviously just a byproduct of playing in the AFC South and getting four games guaranteed against the Jags and the Texans. But all in all, can't complain as a Titans fan with the schedule. Shakes out pretty good. We got four games in primetime, although I believe they are all, or three or four of them are on the road. I think that we play Dallas at home in a primetime game late in December.
Interesting.
Isn't it, though? Thank you, Jacob. That is the Top 4 at 4 brought to you by National Law Rex, where we are this afternoon. Ask them about their generics program, how you can save big with the generics program right here at National Law Rex. If you have a name brand drug that you take every day that you have a continuous prescription to, you can get that. The generic program can save you a lot of money on your constant prescriptions. Call down here, National Law Rex, tell them Fan Run sent you, and talk to one of the pharmacists about it. If your bills are a little bit high, maybe they could be saving you some money down here at National Law Rex. 865-392-1770 is their number. That's 392-1770, and they're online at nationalrx.com. We're here at National Law Rex for another 2 hours. Terry Fair is going to join us, hopefully in person, I believe, here in about 12 minutes. So if you want to jump on, now would be a great time to take a shot. 865-546-8200 is your number to get on the show. 546-8200. Of course, we are halfway through May. And coming up time flies, man. Coming up here in a week or two, you've got the SEC spring meetings down there in Destin, and we are expecting a consensus to emerge as to what the scheduling will look like for the future in the Southeastern Conference once Texas and Oklahoma join the fray, making it a 16-team super conference. And everything we hear seems to be pointing towards the league adopting some sort of pod system. Three permanent opponents and then five rotators. The ACC is talking about going towards this kind of scheduling setup in the future. And it looks like a very strong chance that the SEC might as well. Guys, we've been over this a lot through the years. Is it inevitable that we are heading towards a pod system in the SEC?
Give me that pod we saw the other day.
Yeah, no, it's not going to be that. All right, it probably will wrestle in our pods. Going to be us, Bama, Auburn, Vanderbilt. Oh,
that seems to be the consensus towards where this thing is headed. I've got mixed feelings on it. I think that's manageable from a Tennessee perspective. If you get Alabama in your pod, to me, it's only fair that you also have Vanderbilt in your pod. Nick Saban turns 71. Nick Saban turns 71 this year, guys. Now, maybe there's a small outside chance that he could be coaching with his head in a tank a la Futurama for the next 50 years. I'm going to go ahead and bet against that and say that five more years or so of Nick Saban, we're looking at a college football model and time of change and how it's going to look going forward. I mean, you could do worse. You could do worse than having Alabama, Auburn in your setup and Vanderbilt in your pod moving forward. I just think the problem I see more than Alabama just coming with a continued run of dominance is when Saban finally steps down, whenever that is, they're going to cycle down, but that's going to be just as big an opportunity for Auburn as it is for Tennessee.
Absolutely.
So it's just as likely that they cycle up at that point as it does for Tennessee.
Yeah. It's going to be really, if they go that route, I think that they're going to keep Alabama and Tennessee together to preserve the rivalry. And I mean, if you're getting Alabama, you're getting Auburn as part of that deal too. So, I mean, at that point they have to put Vanderbilt in there.
Now, I think what is really interesting to consider big picture-wise in college football is what happens next in terms of conference realignment across the board. I was reading Pete Thamel, who is on the list. ESPN Today had what I feel like is the best write-up I've seen on the current college football situation so far. And it's really in-depth. I won't attempt to shorten it up here for you this afternoon. You just have to go read it. But one of the things that is interesting that college football is having to deal with is the SEC and the Big Ten just running away from the other big conferences right now in terms of overall revenue and the TV deals that they're bringing in. And Thamel illustrated a conservative estimate that says if things continue on their current course, the SEC and Big Ten are going to be raking in about $30 million more per school than the schools in the ACC, the Big 12, and even the Pac-12. And in an era of NIL and funneling money back to the players, he posits that's unsustainable for the other schools. And so the logical thing is that some of those other schools in the ACC and the Pac-12 especially would try to jump to a better conference. Greg Sankey, if you read some of his comments, not exactly enamored with the way all this stuff is played out, from inaction on the playoff expansion to inaction on NIL legislation. And I think it's going to be interesting to see if, you know, hypothetically, if the SEC were to able to add USC to its ranks, and maybe Clemson and maybe even Florida State. You could just go ahead and do that, and then all of a sudden you're talking – you get up towards 20 teams, all of a sudden you've got a Premier League-like situation on your hands, and Greg Sankey, the SEC, could essentially end up forcing the other league's hands and saying, look, you guys want to expand the playoff? That's fine. We'll have our own playoff, and maybe our champion will meet your champion in some kind of postseason – winner-take-all championship game, but we gave you a chance to expand the playoff. Hey, you saw what happened this year. Two of our teams were playing for the national championship anyway. We're trying to help you out and give you more access to this thing. And guess who the top teams in the top 25 are going to be coming into this season, by the way. So,
and we also just added another team that has been a frequent participant in the college football playoff in Oklahoma.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see what the next step in all this is, because the SEC goes much further as far as attracting more teams. You could have a situation where they're just kind of preemptively cutting the head off the snake, so to speak, of the other leagues, because a Pac-12 without USC and even an ACC without Clemson, a lot less bargaining power. A lot less bargaining power than those leagues currently have right now. And, man, you can't tell me that some of those conversations aren't going on behind the scenes at some of those other schools. Hey, wouldn't we be better off just jumping to the SEC too? And you think, we would hear something about that. Not necessarily. Remember what a big surprise it was when the news dropped that Texas and Oklahoma were coming to the SEC. Nobody saw that coming. That came out of the blue.
I mean, what's going to happen if Sankey in the next couple of years pops up and all of a sudden USC, let's say, you, for instance, USC and UCLA are, I guess we'll still call it the SEC. I don't know what they'll call it, but basically add those two from the Pac-12, and he just raids two to four more teams.
I could see it happening.
You get a lot closer to basically the NFL model.
I could see it happening. And look, there's still all kinds of things. You know, how do you address the school element of it, the academic element of it? How do you address Title IX? I don't know, but we're seeing this, slow incremental change, and you get the sense that maybe the powers that be in the SEC are tired of that slow incremental change and would like to see something a little bit more sudden, a little bit more revolutionary. And you've got two different forces pulling at each other right now, and it's going to be interesting to see who wins out.
Do you guys, we'll ask Terry here in a minute. I'm ready for him to rip the Band-Aid off, man. Just go ahead and do it. Everybody knows that it's broken right now. And it's not just the NIL stuff. To me, the transfer portal and the immediate eligibility is a lot bigger danger to the sport than the NIL stuff is.
Yeah. Let's take a quick timeout. We'll come back. T-Fair is here. We'll talk to him when we continue live this afternoon from National RX. The Drive rages on right here on Fan Run Radio.
T-Fair is there. Terry Fair is there. Success is learned and it's also earned. It's a price you pay that sends you on your way. Success is here and it's everywhere.
He's here, Terry Fair, brought to you by our friends at Craven Wings, joining us live out here at National RX in Farragut. Good afternoon, Terry. How are you, sir?
Gentlemen, what's going on?
Hey, man, good to see you.
Always a pleasure.
Off season, man. We're finding a little college baseball to talk about, NBA playoffs, but college football never far from the forefront. We were just talking before you came on here at the SEC spring meetings, and the word is that they're coming towards a consensus. What are we going to do with the SEC once you get Oklahoma and Texas in here. You go pods, you go divisions. What do you think, Terry? He's a guy who played in this league, has coached in this league. From a Tennessee perspective, what is the best possible outcome for conference expansion?
You know, you see the pods as being the popular thing. You know, me, I like division still in the SEC. I think if you go, when you go to pods, you lose a lot. You know, I know it's 2022 and times are changing. I don't want to get on Bears' bad side, but, you know, times are changing, and a lot of those traditions that we love as players, as fans, that we've grew up with in this game are, you know, unfortunately, a lot of those we're probably going to see come to an end in terms of some of the rivalry games that, you know, are traditional in SEC that you get ready for, that, you know, even though you may be getting your butt kicked in those rivalries, are some of those going to go away? You know, is some of that going to take away from the pageantry of the SEC? But again, when it comes down to it, it's all about that mighty dollar, right? And it's all about making money, and money trumps everything. So we'll see. You know, I think the SEC is going to continue to grow. I heard you guys talking about the SEC and Big Ten. When you look at the SEC and Big Ten, man, there's different animals. Even the fan bases are different and more passionate when you look at SEC and Big Ten. When you look at the Pac-12, not as much passion there on that side of the country, right? It's not as – you don't have the traditionalism in terms of the football. People live and die for it in this part of the country, not so much in that part of the country. So it's just different, man. I think that's why this side makes a lot more money than that side.
The SEC has expanded and expanded. You know, I remember when it was a 10-team league, and then Arkansas and South Carolina came in. And now you've got Mizzou and Texas A&M, and it's not so much Southeastern anymore. You're getting bigger and bigger. Could you see a day when you have a USC or a Washington? Or, I mean, you've already got some of these. We've heard about USC going to the Big Ten. It just seems like they're consolidating more and more, and we're headed towards two, three, four major conferences, or maybe even just one league like the NFL.
I think you may have to, right? I think those days of it used to be travel, you know what I mean? You know, this team would have to pick up and go across the country and play how many games across the country. I don't think anyone cares anymore, right? It's not really a big deal. You see it done, like you said, in the NFL all the time. I just think you have to go where it's going to be financially, you know, rewarding for your school, for your program. And I think if it happens, it's those days of saying that, hey, let's just keep it around here. No, you want the best teams in your divisions. And I can see college football going that way. I think it is. So, no, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that you would see one of those West Coast teams coming to join an SEC, or it's going to be a free-for-fall. You know, what conference is going to do the best for us? Can we flourish in? Can we get our name out there and also make a lot of money?
Yeah, well, I mean, the other option, the other thing to consider here with all the money that's going in is players are getting their cut now. And they call it NIL, but, I mean, it seems like this is heading more and more towards a professional model. You know, we can
pay to
talk
play
for hours about how you tie it into the school aspect and all that stuff of it. But, I mean, that's been talked about a lot this week is – some coaches are for it. Some coaches obviously not for it, but it's here to stay.
Listen, I heard somebody say, coaches, shut up and get used to it and do what you got to do. Wait a minute. It's easy if you're on the outside looking in, where you don't got to get your butt out there and put yourself in these coaches' shoes. So to say, shut up, wait a minute now, maybe you need to chill out and shut up yourself.
Ooh.
Because these coaches, man, and what they have to go through, they have to reinvent themselves on a whole different level now. You know, Deion Sanders came out and said this the other day, and we've talked about it on this show. He said, man, it gets kind of tricky here because this money is going to expose some of these young players for who they really are and their attitudes when they're making more than their coach. This is coming from a guy who's coached. He's been around it for a long time. He's one of the best ever to ever do it. He was one of the flashiest to ever do it. He knows what money is all about. He knows what promoting himself is all about and what that means. So, you know, you look at it that way, he was talking about you're going to have to add more coaches to your staff to monitor everything, to get somebody around these guys, you know, in terms of keeping their attitudes and everything else in check. Yeah, so now here's the difference, all right? You're talking about shut up to these college coaches. Here's where it gets tricky. Yeah, it's turning into the NFL, right? It's turning into a professional league. But professional coaches, NFL coaches, they don't have to recruit, right? They got front offices, big-time offices, scouts that go on the road. You got in-house people, GMs who handle all of that. Coaches, yeah, they have a very minute part in that. You know what I mean? So these college coaches are out on the road. They're still recruiting. They're still coaching. They don't get 4 months off, you know, 3 months off, a whole 2 months off in the summer to do what these NFL guys do. So it's a lot different for them.
Bear, jump in here. You got Terry Fair brought to you by Craven Wings.
Yeah, to me, the thing that I would like to see him address before the NIL what I think is messing it up more than NIL is, you know, the transfer portal and the immediate eligibility, because that's what's allowing, you know, when you combine that with the NIL, I mean, this is a nightmare. And we all know that schools are tampering with other schools' players. You know what's going on.
And that's the thing. They try to say that, you know, it's two separate things, right? NIL and the transfer portal are two separate things. But are they?
Because that Jordan Addison did up at Pitt.
Right, because you
it's all three. It's transferring, the transfer portal, and NIL.
Correct. So they are kind of interlinked together as well. You know what I mean? But, hey, I mean, it's not going anywhere. It's here to stay. The NCAA built it. Now they've got to live with it. You know what I mean? How they design it and what they do moving forward is a totally different story. But, again, this is something that has blown up in your face that you didn't think about what may happen, or you didn't think far enough ahead or put parameters in place or set those parameters. And now this is a result of what you did.
Well, I think that was Mike Bray's point. Mike Bray was the coach at Notre Dame who was saying, I don't think he was saying shut up about it, but he's like, it's here to stay, you know, and we can either lament and the good old days and everything. Like, the good old days are not coming back. Like, they're not going to stop NIL deals at this point, because the courts have essentially said that you can't stop the NIL deals. So we got to figure out a way to recreate college sports, because it is going to look a lot different once you've got 18, 19 year old kids in there with $1 million NIL deals. It's not going to be the same. The power dynamic shifts a little bit.
It does. And you just hate to see it. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, this was a game to where, you know, it was an introduction and you were playing to get to that next level. Now, you look at the amount of money that's generated in sports and college athletics right now. It's ridiculous. And you should be given something based off what you do for that program. And it's not going to be even across the board through men's or women's sports, through players and different players. I mean, it's all based off of who you are, you know, and what you're providing to the game. My only concern is, I think a lot of people's concern is to get to the NFL is what you do in college. You know, we've seen way too many high school guys that were, I mean, hell of a high school athletes and players, but got to the college ranks and it didn't pan out for them. So is there any parameters on saying, okay, we're going to give a kid X amount of dollars, but he hadn't played one game on a college level. If he goes out there and doesn't play well, can we take that back, or does he lose his endorsement or NIL deal until he does something else? And if he does lose it, he still has to remain on this team until he shows he can produce on the field and gain some more.
Yeah. It's what Rick Barnes had to confront with Julian Phillips, the kid who committed yesterday. I mean, he's going to be, we don't know the figures, but you know, he's going to be making something, and there's a pretty good chance he's going to have more income than guys who are on the team that are already established. What happens if he's just kind of a role player on next year's team? I think in this situation, like Barnes and the players in that team, culture is probably good enough to handle that situation. But you know good and well there's going to be situations where we already saw one down there in Miami where the guy transfers down there. It's announced he's got an $800,000 deal. But there's already a player on there who's already an all-ACC player. And he's like, well, wait a minute. I'm just going to hop in the portal, basically hold the school hostage until they up my NIL deal to match this transfer who just came in.
Yeah, it's a crazy situation that I'm glad I'm not a part of right now, man, because it's going to continue to get even worse as we see it.
Jake, jump in here. Jake Miller back in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios has a thought.
Sorry. One of the things that I wanted to bring up is the fact, you know, we talked about the Miami kid, and he's probably one of the few that's going to act this way towards it. It's definitely pay for play. But something that nobody ever talks about is what this money can do for these kids in their personal lives. You know, some people might be trying to get their family out of a bad situation or just be able to help pay some bills back home. Nobody's talking about that. The only thing that anybody ever sees is, oh, well, this guy just went here because he's getting that much money. It's like, okay, well, did you ever think he might need that money for not only himself but his family back home?
Well, listen, I hear you, Jake, and shoot, that's 95% of college right there, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people need that money back home, but that's why a lot of people, you know, and this has nothing to do with guys being paid, but if you're going that route, I mean, I can tell you countless guys who came to college who knew they had to put up or shut up because they had to take care of their family at home and do what they had to do, or you come to college and you don't have a car, you don't have certain things for 3 to 4 years, and you working your ass off to go out and get it. And that's why you go out there each and every day and bust your tail. And on Saturdays, you bring it on Saturdays because you want to get to that point to get there. Now, I would have been great to get a little help to, you know, help that burden along the way. I think, you know, it made guys hungry as well. But all I'm saying is it's a valid point across the board when you're talking about production and what people have. Yeah, there's people on the team that's producing, but now you throw in recruiting in, you know, instead of production, it goes off on a different story. And that's why I think, you know, yeah, some guys probably are mad because, you know, they've been productive. They've been, you know, playing at this high a level. And then you got a kid that's coming in based off recruiting where money was given under the table before. Now it's out and open, so everybody knows what they're getting. And, yeah, it's going to be some disgruntled players.
You know what's interesting is people always used to talk about, whether it's football, basketball, making the league. You get to college, and it's all about what you just talked about, put in the work so you can make the league and get paid. And I just wonder if now if college is going to be making the league to some people. It's like you get there, okay, I've got that money, and NFL becomes the new second contract. You know, it's all about getting to that second contract. You get your rookie deal, get to that second contract. Well, now the NFL becomes the second contract.
It's crazy.
The second contract is the third contract.
Absolutely crazy, because listen, do you know how many – not many people in the NFL make $1 million. You know what I mean? I mean, I don't think people understand it. I think people think National Football League and they automatically think millions of dollars, but that is not the case. You know, guys have to work their way up, you know, I mean, to get, like you said, that second contract, that earning potential. Everybody doesn't come in that way. So, yeah, I mean, like you said, Russ, does it have the same effect in terms of that hunger and going out and competing each and every week to go out and get it rather than already having it?
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Yeah, you're right about that.
It's going to be interesting to see how it changes. But again, it's here to stay. One other point on this, and then we'll move on. I did see where somebody, I think it was A to Z Sports, had an article basically comparing Deion Sanders' thoughts on this to Josh Heupel's thoughts on it. And, you know, Deion was kind of the pump the brakes thing, or is Heupel's kind of just embracing it? I guess it's pretty easy to do when you got Spire Sports out there throwing the cash around. But Heupel, one point I hadn't considered, Heupel said basically, hey, all the knucklehead issues that I've had to deal with as a head coach for the past 3 years have drastically gone away, because now when you do have a guy, college player, who's got a little bit of money, it's more incentive to not get in trouble, basically, because that money could go away. Now, I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know if we're quite there yet, if that's for everybody, but it was an interesting point to consider.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's very, very interesting. But guys who, I mean, do stop people in the NFL from getting in trouble?
That's a good point.
Nope.
All right. Okay. I mean, so I don't.
But can
I mean,
you imagine either how much the NFL guys would get in trouble if they weren't getting paid?
Well, that's just college.
I don't know. That's just college ball. Yeah. I don't know if you saw a dude up at Kentucky, Chris Rodriguez, the running back who's been there for like 40 years.
Yeah.
Got popped for DUI earlier in the week.
Mm-hmm.
Did not show up to his court date today, and there's a warrant out for his arrest now.
Yeah, that makes no sense. And I mean, what? Yeah, I don't.
It's like, dude, do you think they're just going to forget about that? Just let it go? Like, doesn't Kentucky have a guy that when your star running back gets DUI, isn't there a guy on staff that's like, it's his job to follow through on this, make sure the young man shows up at court and does all the things he's got
to
do?
You don't even have to be the star running back. You can be a guy on a team and somebody is going to go to court with you. You know what I mean? So, and make sure you're there. So, yeah, that's a little – I don't understand that.
Miscommunication right there.
More than miscommunication. That's a total –
Somebody messed up.
Can't say the
cluster.
Word. Yeah.
I mean, the kid has he's got a warrant now.
Yeah, go and turn yourself in. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't make them come looking for you. That doesn't end well. All right. Stay with us. The drive continues. When we come back, we'll get Terry's thoughts on NBA playoffs heating up. We've got a couple of game sixes tonight and a game seven coming up this weekend.
It's going to be great.
Stay with us. The drive continues. It's Fan Run Radio. All right, back here on the drive. It's Fan Run Radio. How about Jimmy Butler last night? You see him going into the locker room, Tobias Harris over me? Did you see that? That's what he said.
Yeah, I like Jimmy Butler. He's keeping it real, man. How about that, though? I mean, listen, I just like watching that guy play because it's like he just loves to play. You know what I mean? He doesn't.
When you talk about dudes who would fit in back in the day, I think he's got that mentality.
Yeah, because he just plays. He don't talk. He really don't talk a lot. He's a good dude. He's a good teammate. All of that stuff, man. And he gets buckets. You know what I mean? He loves the game. Unlike the other guy, you know, on the Philadelphia 76ers.
James Larden.
Oh, my goodness, man. I mean, is that ridiculous or what? You know, some guys just love to play, and some guys just love to play sometime. And I think that guy's one of those guys. Man, you don't go, and you're one of the best players in the league. He gets to Philly, right? And he's putting up double-doubles. I mean, the chemistry between him and Joel, you know what I mean, was great early on. And I don't know if it's his body or whatever, and he just starts to fizzle out, you know what I mean? And it's just, you hate to see it because the guy is a good player, you know what I mean? Is something wrong with him? Is he hurt? What's the deal?
Can't push away from the table, it looks like. I mean, it's like, he showed up in Brooklyn overweight.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you had an injury or whatever, like there was a layoff, 2020 happened, whatever. You'd think that over the course of a season or two, you could play your way back into shape. He's still fat.
I mean, what he, you know, it's a lot of people question his offseason and what he does, right?
Yeah.
And, I mean, dude, you got enough money. Hire your personal chef. Get you a trainer. You know what I mean? We could resurrect Mickey from the dead, from Rocky, to come back and train him or chase chickens or do something. I mean, anything. You know what I mean? But that performance, man, you can't have. You got a guy like Maxey, who, you know, is your best guard on the team. When you got a Hall of Fame guy on a team, you know, you think you bring in a guy, you trade away all of this stuff for this guy that's going to come in and get you at least to the Eastern Conference Finals, and you don't even make it. You know, now granted, Miami is a really good basketball team.
Yeah.
From top to bottom, with a lot of athletic guys along that can defend and that have great chemistry. You know what I mean? So it's no shock that Miami won it. You just thought Philly was going to be a little more competitive in that series.
I like that Spoelstra guy, man. He's You know, he was looked at as the guy who was just sort of put on the bench while LeBron and the superstars go win a championship.
Yeah.
Like this would be much more, you know, of his own making.
Yeah.
Because they've got stars on that team, but they don't have superstars.
They don't. They don't. I mean, they've been building that for a long time. I mean, that's the same team that played the Lakers in the bubble. You know what I mean? Nothing is different with that team. They've added a few pieces, but they hadn't gone out and, you know, to Jake's point, paid a lot of, you know, star athletes to come in there and build a super team. You know, they've built that. Spoelstra has built it. And he hadn't even aged at all. You know what I mean? He still looked the same as the day he took over, right?
All right, so the other game last night, yeah, I mean, he looks like he's 24 years old out there, doesn't he? That was that's Butch's boy, right?
He's yeah, yeah, that's Butch's boy, yeah.
What about the Suns going home? Man, am I crazy? I kind of think the Mavs are going to take that game seven.
Well, I mean, I don't think you're crazy in saying that, but this has been a tale of two homes, right? I mean, each team has been really dominant on their home court. Mm-hmm. All right, you got Phoenix, they've won there. Dallas, everybody's won at home. Okay, Chris Paul hadn't been playing like himself at home or on the road in the last couple of games. You know, turning the ball over. Yeah. I think what they're doing a good job of is putting, is it Bullock or Bullock? They change his name every time they say it, but he's been doing a good job of, like New Orleans did in the first round, of putting pressure on him early and trying to tire him out and wear him down. And it seems to be working. But, you know, I never think you can count out Chris Paul in key situations because he's just that type of player in terms of being crafty, being a heady veteran, being a guy out there that you're going to rely on, that you can depend on. But I say this, Phoenix crowd is going to be unbelievable. If Dallas, where they will have a chance, we know Luka's going to come to play. Okay, last time they showed up on Phoenix floor, Luka, I think, turned the ball over too much, tried to do too much. He's got to get those guys like Brunson, Finney-Smith. I mean, can those guys come to play, right? All of those others that's hitting threes, can they take their show on the road for one game and close it out? That's going to be the story. Everything that they did at home, can Luka get three guys to join him and go for over 15 points in Phoenix? If he can get that, they will win that game.
Everything you say about Harden, you can say about Chris Paul. You know, because he ain't been there either. He's just we give him a pass because he's more likable. You know,
is he? I mean, I don't dislike Harden. What's the dislike about Harden?
I don't know, man.
Why don't people like Harden? I mean, because he doesn't
out of
seem
the strip club and. He's okay. Overweight.
Okay, who hadn't been to the strip club? I mean, people just know. Okay, all right. I mean, how do you know? Right? Nobody knows. But is that why we're mad at Harden?
The strip club, yes. I don't know. No, I mean, he, I think, is.
Okay. I got you.
He kind of represents that isolation basketball where it's just like, get out of my way. And now all of a sudden he can't do that anymore. And it's like, okay, well, what else do you bring to the table? Obviously not enough.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm just giving you a hard time on that. I know why, but
he's also playing in Philly where everything's magnified and that fan base always has to have a goat.
Right? Yeah.
And not the greatest of all time. A goat, like a scapegoat.
Right.
We're putting the blame on you, and it feels like it's James Harden this year.
Yeah, it is. But look, Chris Paul, man, I can say this. Chris Paul has always been of high character. He's always been one of the best point guards out there. And this is the other thing. He's always made people around him better, right? And every team he's been on has taken on his persona. Like, Chris Paul is like an old school point guard who you can be best friends with him, but when you get on the court, he'll slap the hell out of you. You know what I mean? And not even blink and not think about it. He's going to try to take your lunch each and every day and eat your sandwich right in front of you. That's Chris Paul, man. I mean, that's what you love about the guys, his tenacity and his will about the game. If there's anybody that can will Phoenix, it's him. But to me, the key to Phoenix is DeAndre Ayton, the big guy. You know what I mean? Who I didn't think he has imposed his will the whole series. Man, they don't have anybody that can stop him down low.
He kind of disappeared yesterday.
Yeah. Well, they don't give him the ball enough. You know, there's too much perimeter play with the Suns and not enough physical play down low. And that's one of the reasons I don't think, you know, Phoenix is in dangerous territory this game because man, I don't. If Luka
shots aren't falling, you're
right,
in trouble.
If they're not falling, and Luka could be the leader and playmaker that he can be, and he can get those guys together and say, "Hey, man, we got one shot at this. One shot. I need three of you."
Breaking the Eminem territory right here.
You know, I need Mom's three spaghetti. Of you. You know, I mean, hey, if he gets some help, they can beat Phoenix. And listen, Phoenix, man, this is going to be their what? Second game seven in two series? Because they went to game seven with New Orleans, correct? Yep. I mean, man, this is the playoffs. Yeah. At some point, you know, if they're going to advance, this stuff starts to wear on you. They've been one of the best teams in the NBA all season. But there are some flaws with that team. If they don't get a fast start from a Devin Booker tomorrow, they're going to be in trouble.
All right, so the winner of that one will face the winner of Golden State, Memphis. Grizzlies looked left for dead. Ja Morant out, looks like he's not going to play again this series. They come out there and put probably the beatdown of the playoffs so far on Golden State in Game 5. Game 6 is tonight in Golden State. Can the Grizzlies force a Game 7? If they do, you almost kind of like their chances going back to the grindhouse.
Man, and I hate so bad that, you know, he can't play. But, man, you look at Memphis and he's got this whole series. There's been two blowout games in each series, won by each team. Outside of those two blowout games, each game has been winnable either way for either team. This has been a very, very competitive series. Now, I think the thing that Memphis has in their favor now is Adams is back. And I think when you have him inside, you know, he's from New Zealand. You know what I mean? He's Polynesian. Man, that's a big, strong, mean, friendly dude. You know what I mean? Like, he's a great teammate. You know what I mean? But, I mean, he's a monster.
He's an enforcer.
Yeah, he is, man. I don't think Golden State has anybody that can match up with him. If Memphis would be physical, you know, if Jackson got in the paint too with his size, he can shoot threes. They dominate down low against Golden State, and I think that's where they can win the game. So, but I just think if they come out and they just play four quarters of controlled basketball, because one thing that they are doing without Ja Morant is they're moving the ball around. Is everybody getting a chance to touch the ball? Yeah. Everybody's getting a chance to be in rhythm. Everybody's getting a chance to be a factor out on the court when you get sometimes that star player. You know, you see it with Luka a lot. You see it with a lot of these ball-dominant guys. Man, guys can't get in the rhythm because they can't get the damn ball or they can't get the feel early in the game. When they finally get it, maybe in a pressure situation, shot clock is running down because this guy's dribbled it the whole time and he wants you to bail him out. So they're playing more collectively as a unit in Memphis. And I don't know, man, they're going to have a chance to whip that trick tonight.
It's like the Celtics the other night. I don't think they were trying to go to Marcus Smart in that situation. It's just the way the play kind of developed. But, man, like, you got some other options out there. And now all of a sudden their backs are against the wall. Must-win situation tonight against Milwaukee. How do you see this one playing out?
I think, man, Milwaukee, Boston is deep. I like Boston, but I think Milwaukee – you know, man, they just have championship pedigree. You know what I mean? They're doing this without an all-star and Chris Middleton, too. You know what I mean? Who's been out. So who, if they go to game seven, who probably may be back for that game. But, you know, I think a game like this, you want to close it out. You got to have a big game from Jrue Holiday offensively. He's been struggling. You know, you got probably two of the best, strongest, not the biggest defensive guards going against each other in Smart and Holiday in this round. And, you know, Holiday hadn't had a good game offensively, made a good play at the end of that game, but he hadn't had a really breakout game yet. This has got to be a night where he's got to come out and explode for a 30-point game. If he can do that, Milwaukee moves on, man, and then they get their guy back.
The NBA playoffs, it's fantastic.
No, it's been good, man. I mean, you know, I'm up till 1 o'clock in the morning watching these games each and every night. I'm like, oh, man, I just – it's been good. It hadn't been a lot of blowouts. The games that were blowouts is.
I've seen the team just like when Golden State the other night, it's like, okay, we're getting blowed out. Whatever. Yeah. We go back home and just like, we're not even going to contest at this. Like, they decided that early Like at halftime, it's just like, all right, we're gonna.
Yeah, you see Draymond there celebrating, dancing with the, you know.
Dude, if that's any other team, if that's like a college team and you're getting blowed out like that and your team's dancing to the other team's thing, yeah. Oh man, that's not a good
look. Oh no, no, you go. I mean, but I think he's doing that for a reason. He know they're at the point of no return. They're not gonna win that game, so he's just trying to let them know they're going home. They're not coming back. Basically, he's sending a message, right? Like, y'all better get it out y'all system, because we are not coming back. And I don't know, man. Lately, down the stretch, if their three balls aren't working, man, Memphis is in there. It's going to be a game. They're forcing a game seven, you know?
Terry, we appreciate you, my man. Craven Wings, go check them out. Tell them T-Fair sent you. South Knoxville, Seymour Highway, in Seymour Chapman Highway. And West Knoxville on North Shore Drive. Terry, appreciate it as always, my friend. Have a great weekend.
Appreciate it, fellas. Always a pleasure, man. Look forward to coming back next week and talking about this NBA some more. And I'm sure it's going to be more crazy stuff on the college front. Yep. So,
absolutely. All right, we'll do it again. Stay with us. Hour number three of The Drive coming up.